What's up, 11.7 Nation? It is episode 51, and this will be the best episode you'll ever hear. We are recapping the regionals that just took place, and we got some super regional previews. You guys enjoy this episode. Let's get it, James. What's up, everybody? Thank you for listening to this episode. We're going to start it out a little bit different than we usually do because we're going instant reactions. We're going hot takes.
The regionals happened.
They happened, and there was some drama, and there was some exciting moments, and there was even some times where it was like hard to watch. And so that's what we're going to start the show with, is some initial reactions and some takes that maybe you haven't heard yet. But we will get more organized later in the show, but we just want to just spill our guts, man. We just want to let the fire out. I'm sure you guys are interested in some of our opinions on some big moments that happened. This is going to be probably my favorite show at the end of it, but we'll have to see. We haven't recorded it yet.
Instant reaction number one. The Georgia Bulldogs let me down hard. I just fell off the like disappointment tree and hit every branch on the way.
That's down. Just like, living in Georgia, that's just what happens being a Georgia Bulldog fan.
In
every situation, they just let their fans down. You should have known. That's why I picked Florida State to win that region, because I knew the Bulldogs would not be ready.
I refuse to believe that happened. This team just had multiple top five round draft picks, guys throwing 100 miles an hour, all sorts of talent, two-way players, and just hammered. Georgia let me down. We have questionable coaching decisions. The Liberty Flames are tied against Tennessee. Bases loaded. Nobody out in the ninth inning. And they don't. All they need is one run to win the freaking game. And I don't want to be the guy who second guesses decisions, but I will say this. If the thought and the conversation of a suicide squeeze was not had in the dugout, wrong. Wrong.
So not saying they had to squeeze, but you're just saying the thought, if they did not think about squeezing in that situation, then they're wrong.
What I'm saying is, if between the hitting coach and the head coach, if they didn't tap each other on the shoulder and like do like the little freaking squeeze my nose for squeeze and go, and like if they didn't at least have that conversation, wrong. It's the easiest way to win a game. It's not like you're on the road, you know, where like you don't know how many runs you need because the other team has to bat. It's like, no. Like, we're just easiest way to – I can summarize it very quickly. The thing Tennessee was most terrified of was a suicide squeeze, because there's nothing you can do to stop it if they get it down. And the only thing you're able to do is throw bad pitches. But if you throw enough bad pitches, you walk in the winning run. There's literally nothing you can do. And I don't know if they thought about it, but they better have. So go ahead.
That was not the place I thought you were going to start the show off with. I thought we were going to go a completely different route, but you're right. Liberty was tied with Tennessee. And the bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, nobody out. I turn the channel because I'm like, okay, Liberty wins this game. I have Tennessee in the College World Series. This is disappointing. And I turn back and like 15 minutes later, and what do you know? Tennessee's batting in the 10th inning, scoring runs. And I'm like, what happened? What in the world happened? And so I wasn't there to witness them not score runs, but I found out that it was a strikeout and then a double play, or
a line out to first and then a tapper back to the pitcher for a double play.
Infield in,
an absolute linea to first base right to him, and then a 1-2-3 double play that you couldn't have set up any better if your life depended on it.
Did Liberty like pack their bags up after that and just like after that moment they're like, well, we're not winning this game?
They should have.
You can't win. Like, the win probability went from 98.5 to like 1.5 within one pitch.
That I honestly don't know if that's the type of thing that even good team, like even elite teams, recover from. And the reason I think that is because elite teams don't let those type of situations escape. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like the old Augie Garrido teams, like, you don't blow those situations.
Augie Garrido would have bunted three times in a row.
But two outs, dude. We're doing it.
Squeeze. Put them in a pressure situation. That's what Augie Garrido would have done.
Put pressure on them.
If this was a street fight, which none of you know anything about, dude, we'd be dead.
Speaking of street fights, I think the West Virginia fans were going to get in street fights with each other after they blew an 8-run lead.
Can we talk about another street fight that almost happened with the Indiana coaching staff? Our boy Casey Dykes, like, what a legend, just charges the umpires after that called third strike. And I thought the umpire was coming back to fight him. I thought they were about to drop gloves and just swing at each other.
Dude, I have such a problem with the umpires in this game. But before we dive into what they did on the Louisville end, like, one, you need to know that when you make that strike three call, it's going to be controversial. Like, it was questionable at best and a bad decision at worst, right? And then... Like, when the game's over, you should not turn around and engage with the coach or the players. What do you think is going to happen? What are you going to do? Calm them down? Just leave. Just don't say, like, unless you feel like your life's being threatened, just leave. You had a great point on Twitter. You said, these guys are going to take a shower and leave without answering a single question. That's got to change. I hope someone's holding them accountable, because it was questionable at best.
So for the fans that are like listening that maybe didn't get to see it, one, maybe pull up social media one day in your life and look at it, because it was all over the place. But what happened was, and that's not even the most questionable thing. The most questionable thing that happened was what ESPN did.
Oh my God.
And so I'm going to tell the whole story in about 15 seconds. Ready?
No, take more time.
Okay. So Louisville and Indiana are playing. It's bottom nine or top nine. I think it was top of nine. And Indiana was down 7-5. So it's a two-run game, tying run at the plate. It's their big donkey who has some juice. And there was a pitch on a 3-1 count that was close. And the Louisville pitcher said, "That's horrible."
No. It was a two-strike count. Because if it was a 3-1 count in the ball, they would have walked him. So there was two strikes.
I think it might have been 2-2. And Louisville's closer gets ejected from the game because you could read his lips. He said, "That's horrible." And then there was a big controversy over that. Umpire just ejects him, like, runs out to the mound to inject him, too. Like, it wasn't even like he was, like, it was the other way around. Like, Louisville guy was walking back, said, "That's horrible." Home plate umpire threw him out of the game. And then, so new pitcher comes in, and the next pitch was a ball that crosses. Personally, I think it was a strike. It crossed the plate at the knees. It was close, but the catcher just does the worst frame job of all time. Literally picks the ball up from the ground, and it was a 12-6 curveball, picks the ball up and raises it to his knees. Umpire punches him out. And
it looks bad.
It looks bad. It looks way worse than it was, but there is some angles that show that it might have actually been a strike. And basically, Indiana's whole coaching staff just goes berserk, and there was a lot of drama. And then the benches benches didn't clear, but the Indiana and Louisville team exchanged some words on the pitcher's mound. I don't know what that was all about, but yeah,
like,
it was
you just can't avoid it. Like, if your coaches are going out to confront the umpire, who's going to be there to hold the players back? Yeah. Nobody. So, and it's all happening right in the middle of the field. Louisville's handshaking, and I guarantee you there are some pitchers on Louisville side not afraid to tell them, like, you know, get home, you know, whatever insults you have here. Like, not a good
The peanut situation. Gallery was out and about. Like, just, they were hiding behind everybody. Like, "Hey, go home. Like, game's over, buddy."
Yeah.
Like, we got another game to worry about right now. Like,
yeah, the fellow sandwich eaters.
Yeah, and so basically at the very end of the story, the pitcher gets suspended for 4 games because he gets ejected, which is a rule that just is blowing my mind.
So he's going to miss the first 2 games of a super, because you're right. That was against Indiana. They had to come back and beat Illinois State twice, so that's 2 more left.
Right, and so he's going to miss the first 2 games of the super regional, which is just outrageous to me. That's their best closer. He throws 100 miles an hour. And another thing is, what ESPN did during this whole thing was they actually blacked out the last pitch of the game, because there is like a 15-second tape delay. So the people at ESPN tried to avoid the drama by not showing the last pitch, so it would pop up everywhere on social media. And the pitch was that bad, where at least it looked like it from, you know, behind center field where the broadcast view is, that they had time to literally collect the images and just put a black screen on for about 30 seconds.
Who makes that decision?
How are you going to like just stop a game broadcast that people are paying to stream on your site and just say, nope, you guys don't get to see the ending of this because we
don't know how it's going to look.
Because it is a bad call, and we don't know how it's going to react on social media. So we're going to save everything. And, like, no, that just blew everything up. Like, because think about it. If you're a fan and you're watching, here comes the pitch, black screen, 30 seconds, you think your Wi-Fi is out, you think the stream is out, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden you see Casey Dykes pop up in an umpire's face. Like, you don't know what's going on.
You have questions. Like, we're not stupid. Like, I don't know who made that decision, but we're not as stupid as you think we are. Good
right.
Lord.
And so that was just the most questionable thing that happened was ESPN's decision to just black it out. Hey, nobody's going to say anything. We'll just leave this
They'll
last.
Never know, Phil. Never... No one watches college baseball.
There isn't 6,000 people at this game watching it. But... That story in itself is just wild. And then it almost came back to bite Louisville in the butt 2 games later when they're playing winner go to the Super Regional against Illinois State. They don't have their closer with a 2-run lead in the ninth, and they bring in this kid who walks somebody. I think he ended up getting, like, he got another hit off of him. And then they get a fly ball to center field for the last out of the game, and the guy just drops it.
Looping
liner that he was camped under and then just lunged at it last second, went past him, game-tying triple. Like, they were that close to not going to a super because their closer was out and their center fielder can't catch a fly ball. So that's what – Louisville will be my team of destiny this year. I don't know. I think it just makes sense. Like, they just keep finding ways to win. They can't hit. My national championship pick can't hit, which isn't a good story. But hey, whatever. They keep winning games.
It is so weird. Like, when their offense picks and chooses to show up, it's like I feel like almost more than any other team. But overall, at the end of all the madness, 12 of the 16 host sites did capture the regional. Heading into the final day, actually, 7 host sites were facing elimination games. And freaking four of them came back to win. Stanford, UCLA, East Carolina, and Louisville all came back to win on elimination day, with Georgia Tech, Georgia, and West Virginia going home. And Oregon State had already gone home the day before. So those are the 4 teams that didn't make it. And I will have my moment in the sun right now, calling that Oregon State would go home, but... and that Michigan would win, but I did have them playing each other, so I will get off the high horse just a bit, because Michigan did not have to beat Oregon State. But so that's kind of a quick summary of the results, but we're going to dive into those more. Ben, just some general thoughts. We waited 5 months for this.
Oh, I know. And we've been in the show for almost 20 minutes now, it feels like, 10, 20 minutes somewhere in there. We haven't even talked about the 2 biggest blown leads we've ever seen on an elimination game between West Virginia and Texas A&M and Arizona State Southern Miss. We had 2 8-run leads blown within like the last 4 innings of the game.
And they were the same day, I think, like going
they were,
on.
No, not just the same day, like the same hour. Within the same hour, we had, I believe it was Bryce Blom of Texas A&M hits a walk-off grand slam, which is just every kid's dream. Yeah. And so West Virginia goes home after blowing an 8-run lead. There was a weather delay in the middle of it. And it was kind of sad to see, because the fans at West Virginia were so pumped, so excited.
That atmosphere was amazing.
They knew they had a chance to come back and beat Duke twice. And I think they were already looking ahead because they weren't throwing their best arms. And they, sure enough, A&M just kept chipping away. And then they were the home team. You leave one pitch up with the bases loaded, and, like, your season's over.
Dude, and I was updating our interactive brackets for social media, and I had already crossed off A&M.
Oh, yeah.
As eliminated. And then a little voice in my head said, dude, the game's not, like, technically over yet. Like, don't post that. And then I said, okay, I won't post it, but whatever. And then they came back and won. How?
It was just a mixture of...
They had two Grand Slams. They hit two Grand Slams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, and I think it was back-to-back innings almost. Yeah. No, maybe the seventh and the ninth. But just A&M, teams are lucky that A&M is out of the tournament. And I'll tell you why. Because not only did they come back and win in this regional, they also came back twice in the SEC tournament. And, like, they were just a late-inning team. Too bad they can't hit innings 1 through 8, though. It was just...
Dude, did you hear the weird rumors that Childress might be leaving to take a Nebraska job? There can't be any truth.
No.
You didn't hear about it, or no, you don't think there's any truth to that?
Both.
Yeah, well, it's on the internet.
Why would he leave an SEC team where he can go below 500 in conference and make the tournament to go to Nebraska?
That's what I'm saying.
I think he actually went to Nebraska. Maybe not.
Even so, like, why go to a crappier place?
Well,
like,
did you see where Oregon State, their head coaching, like, they're on a national search for a new head coach?
What?
They put out a letter like a couple hours ago.
What happened with the guy this year?
I think he was just interim. I think he was just an interim head coach, and they're gonna leave him as an assistant, I assume. And then Pat Casey, like, they kind of penciled him in for next year. It said in the letter, like, they were talking to him throughout the whole year, and checking up on him, making sure that he wanted to come back next year. And he finally said, like, no, I think I'm done. And now they're looking nationwide for a coach. So this is going to provide an opportunity for hopefully some young guy that's in an established program to go out and build a dynasty over at Oregon State.
The foundation is certainly in place with their processes and the way their systems, that the way they do things already. But one of my most favorite moments of the whole weekend, is that a correct sentence? Most favorite? Yeah. One of my most favorite moments of the whole weekend is Trevor Boone's go-ahead homer against Nebraska in the ninth. and this kind of gives me some ammunition in the sense that there's no doubt in my mind that the product from a straight entertainment standpoint of television and media, the product of NCAA college baseball is better than professional baseball from an entertainment standpoint, sitting on your couch, watching it on TV, no doubt in my mind, and we can talk about it later. But Ben, that was my favorite moment of the weekend. His bat flip, and the ball actually put a hole in some of the
text. Literally put a hole, and I think it was the letter A in ballpark. But let's go back to your point, because I think this is a good talking point. And the fact that there was just a constant buzz around the ballpark, there was a lot of drama, a lot of high leverage situations, just energy coming from both dugouts. Like, you're stupid if you think that the product that Major League Baseball puts out day in and day out is equivalent to college baseball.
Well, I mean, we talked before the show, and you've got a favorite team, most likely, in the major leagues. Half the teams they're going to go play, there is no chance that the atmosphere is going to be better, or even some of these places, the attendance is even going to be better than, say, in Arkansas or Mississippi State. So that's one factor. It's just, why do you want to watch a game where half the seats are empty? And it is, clearly, mm-hmm. It's obvious that the game doesn't matter. And then just a second topic is with these Central Michigan kids. Like, they're wearing Yoda masks in the dugout. Like, Santa Claus helmets. Like, it's something, like, you don't see every day. And, like, the announcers are literally laughing on television. Like, don't tell me that's not entertaining. Compared to the major league announcers you hear who do nothing, for a large majority of them, who do nothing but bash the way the game is played now in terms of strikeouts and home runs. And they're telling nothing but stories of, you know, back in my day, we walked 8 miles both ways to get to school. Like, nobody wants to hear that. So,
and the biggest factor I think we're leaving out of this whole entertainment standpoint is that in college baseball, you literally have no idea what's going to happen on every single pitch. Because you have metal bats, you have, for the most part, bad defenses, you have pitchers that don't know where the ball's going. If you watch a Major League Baseball game, and this is like an eye-opening moment for me during watching like 72 straight hours of baseball, When you watch a Major League Baseball game, the pitcher rarely misses where the catcher sets up. But in college baseball, it's the complete opposite. You see where the catcher's setting up, and you just know he's going to move his glove 6 to 8 inches at the least in another direction. Because, and like that just causes more hard hit balls. It causes, and what more hard hit balls cause is bad defense. You know, you get a couple balls off the chest in the infield, or
there's so much less certainty. Like if you see a ball hit on the ground in a major league game, like you can pretty much you can change the channel with a high degree of confidence. Like, okay, well, you know, the Red Sox aren't batting anymore. I'll come back later. You know, this is not, we're not saying that the quality of Major League Baseball is worse. That's not what we're saying.
That's just false. Yeah. The quality is not close.
Right. This is not about the quality of play on the field. This is about entertainment and product.
You know how many hit and runs we saw this? Like, there was hundreds of hit and runs. There was hundreds of stolen bases. Major League Baseball, like, they don't want to steal bases anymore. Like, Jose Altuve steals, like, 6 bases a year now because he doesn't want to hurt his legs.
Well, that's great. And you can't blame him. The guy's going to play 28 games in 30 days. And then another part of it is, like, the things that Tim Anderson has gotten press for doing, it's common. It's a common occurrence in college baseball.
Like, bat flips, big thing.
Yeah, and, you know, there's tons of kids that are having a lot of fun out there. And I don't know. Call me crazy. It's fun to watch other people have fun. I don't know.
Maybe it's contagious or something.
Yeah, that's kind of what entertainment's all about. Like, that's why the NBA, it's part of the reason the NBA is captivating, is because it looks like they're having fun doing what they're doing. Like, there's a reason most people weren't interested in chess or math club. It doesn't look very fun. You know, like if you freaking solve the math problem and threw water in somebody's face, like, it might be more fun. I really don't know. Like Ethan Small punches out some dude from Central Michigan and literally stops in the middle of the field and tells him to come get some.
Yeah.
You only see
double arm pumps with 13,000 fans screaming in his favor, come get some. And the guy gets drafted 2 days later. Like, this is just, you're right. This is an important factor that I think if more Major League Baseball fans sat down and watched some playoff college baseball, they would convert so fast. Unless they just don't like having fun. You know, if they don't like having fun, like, so what? We don't want them on our side.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, something that might help kind of drive the awareness of the entertainment value of college baseball this time of year, like, the draft, it seems, is being more and more dominated. The Major League Baseball draft seems to be more and more dominated by premier college talent.
I think it was 68% of first and second rounders went to a Division I school.
Yeah, and shout out to all the guys that we've been fortunate to spend a little bit of time with getting to know. And
James, like, we had 4 people on this show who got drafted with $1 million slot bonus or higher. Between Manoa at 11, I think Zach Thompson went 15, TJ Sycamore went 38, and Ryan Garcia went like 50-ish. 51, yeah. Something,
you know,
like that.
Maybe we got lucky with those guys in the sense, like, you would have never known from spending 30 plus minutes with each of those guys, like, they were going to be signing for multiple millions of dollars soon. Like, they could have definitely just, they can blow anyone off. Like, hey, man, I pitched at a big school. I played a big school. Like, go away. But they wanted to engage with our fans.
Because stuff like this doesn't exist, James. Like, I don't want to, like, put us on a pedestal, but, like, what we do right now is nobody else is really doing, at least that we're aware of. And we wish there was more, like, we wish there was more people like us, because we want to connect with those people and we want to, you know, help make college baseball like a national sport. Like, what's the difference? Like, why is it that 100,000 people go to Tennessee football games, you know, Rocky Top, their whole spiel every Saturday in the fall, but, you know, their baseball team gets 3,000 fans, and, like, that's good. It's like, oh, yeah, there was 3,000 fans at our game. Like, that's good. Like, what's the difference? Like, why is college football, like, a national sport? And personally, maybe we're just a little biased, which I'm sure we are, but college baseball is more entertaining, more excitement, because their players are allowed to do whatever they want, and there's no, like, rules. Like, they're not treated like celebrities. I think that's what I'm getting at, is these kids are – about to be signed for multi-millions of dollars. And, like, Ryan Garcia, for example, like, he acts like a nerd. He talked about playing video games on our podcast.
I talked to him afterwards about playing video games.
Yeah, it's like, these kids aren't celebrities, which, Maybe that's a good thing. I'm gonna leave it at that. Maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe college baseball is just the best untold secret in American sports, and maybe we just have something that we should just keep small scale because it's gonna get watered down if it ever becomes super popular. But
no, you're right, and I think a lot of people are doing a good job. Like we talked with Mike Rooney, like you couldn't ask for a better like ambassador to like the average fan than a guy like Mike Rooney. Like that's another example of someone who you watch and it's obvious they have fun doing what they're doing and it makes you want to keep watching, you know. Mm-hmm. And like so there's a lot of people doing a great job. I think you hit it on the head. Maybe it's just the best kept secret in the country and maybe it should stay that way. But
yeah,
overall an absolute wild week. I was engaging with one of the Mississippi State followers, and I won't say his name because maybe he doesn't want his name said, but we talked to him a lot. And he said on, yesterday, 2 days ago, he goes, of all of the 7 number one teams, who do you guys think are most likely to come out of loser's bracket? And we talked collectively, and we all agreed, the three of us, that Stanford, UCLA, and Louisville were the three we felt most confident about being able to come through the loser's bracket. Stanford had the easiest
road. I didn't agree with Stanford because I felt like Fresno State was, like, pound for pound just as talented as they were.
Yeah, no, they were definitely – of those three, I was – they would have been third in the power rankings, so to speak. Yeah. But I did like the fact that they were going to play the 4 seed to get back in the championship, and I thought they were going to plan accordingly. And mm-hmm. I looked more into Fresno State as the weekend progressed, and I was definitely like coin flip, honestly, about if Stanford was going to come through. But I mean, of the 7 teams, they were the third. So
yeah, I really thought that this was just another point that I wanted to bring up. But I was really disappointed in Oregon State, which everybody's probably like, well, yeah, duh, they went 0-2. They weren't the same Oregon State team that we've seen, you know, make deep runs into the College World Series. And I'll say that because besides Adley Rutschman, there wasn't one kid that looked like they wanted to be there. Like, they looked like they were almost afraid to meet expectations and, like, questioning, like, uh-oh, like, who is, you know, why is this team here, like, why is Michigan a lot better than we thought, you know, why is Creighton, you know, have
dude,
dudes
that's
that
a good just, take why? I never thought about that, but yeah. I see that now
you could kind of tell it was like they were looking around and they were probably like, why is Creighton just as big and strong as us, like, why do these guys look like we're a top 16 team in the nation, we won the College World Series last year, this isn't what it's supposed to look like. And so it looked like they were afraid to meet expectations. And I think that, and I know we already talked about Pat Casey, but I think the leadership that Pat Casey and the guidance that he provided, there was an absence in that. And I'm not calling out Oregon State's interim coach. I don't even know his name. But I do think, and this is just my personal opinion, I feel like out of all 16 one seeds, Oregon State was the only one that looked around and was like, we're not the best team. Like, why do these teams look bigger, stronger? Why do they look like they have more fun?
Yeah.
We need to meet expectations. And it was like they would get nervous in situations where the crowd was focusing harder. You know, big pitch, big at bat. They were pressing. And I was just disappointed. I thought that they were going to show up in a different attitude. That's why I had them, you know, finishing third or fourth in the College World Series this year. I wanted to talk about that just a little bit. I mean, I don't know. It's not a big deal. They're out of the tournament, but man, that's a tough way to lose out of your own regional. Is
no, 100%. Oh yeah, and it was obvious from the Cincinnati standpoint of if Cincinnati was going down, how they were going down. And not pitching to Adley Rutschman, right? Because they intentionally walked him with the bases loaded and
gave him the old Barry Bonds treatment.
And there were no outs in the inning. Like it's not famous Barry Bonds example, because they showed the video, they were down 2, the Giants were, and there was 2 outs with the bases loaded. So you only had to get one other guy out, and the inning's over. Mm-hmm. They walk Adley Rutschman to put themselves up 3, and there's nobody out with the bases still loaded. Like it's not exactly...
But that's what happens when you have the number 1 overall pick. And he hit 420 this year. Like, you can't, like, if I went and played 12 and under travel ball, I don't know if I hit 420. And you give me any kind of size bat out there. Like, it's hard to do. Like, to remain that consistent. Like, even line drives get caught every once in a while. Or, like, deep flyouts on the warning track, which was actually his last at-bat in an Oregon State uniform, was a deep flyout to the warning track. But you see what I'm saying? Like, there just comes a point where talent takes over. And Adley Rutschman was the most talented hitter, I think, in this whole college baseball era. I think I'm not saying just like this year or last year. I'm saying the season he had this year was one of the best BB Corps eras. I mean, BB Corps seasons I've seen in this era. But I don't know. People.
Hey, I think the Baltimore Orioles agree with you. And it was definitely disappointing not to see him get to Omaha or at least have a deeper run. But overall, and some final takeaways from all the madness with umpires. First of all, like, just shame on the umpires in general. Like,
did you see some of those strike calls, James?
Dude, why is it such a problem? Like, why have a home plate if it doesn't actually mean anything?
There were catchers setting up, I'm not kidding, 8 to 12 inches off the plate, catching the ball on their left knee, and umpires, because it hit the spot, you know, strike three, strike two, whatever. Wait, it is.
Let me just tell you this. If you've never watched a college baseball game on ESPN, or maybe you've only seen one or two and barely paid attention, if you hear the phrase, he hits the outside corner, it is a euphemism for it's 6 inches off the plate. That's what it means.
It's not hittable. You can't put that ball in play. You can foul it off.
I was thinking about this, and instead of just complaining about it, which I'd be more than happy to do because I love our game and I will stick up for the integrity of it, what I would like to see is get rid, because there's some ambiguity between what's over the plate. Because some people will say if any part of the ball touches any part of the white plate, it's a strike, which then leads you to believe, like, if it's an inch and a half off, that's why it gets called a strike, because it looks like just an inch and a half away, some part of it's over the plate, which is stupid. But what I would like to see is the whole ball, pretty much, if you put a gun to my head, the whole ball has to be over the plate. But I'd be willing to go with a higher strike and a lower strike, as long as the ball actually has to cross the plate.
Okay. Wait, let me think about that. So higher strikes, lower strikes.
Fine, I don't care. Like, whatever you got to do, fine. But, like, we can't have 4 inches off inside and outside.
I'll tell you right now, and this is going to get the fans fired up, because I'm about to get fired up, and I can't hold it in any longer. I cannot hold it in. How are you going to call a pitch 6 inches off the plate and still ring guys up for getting hit by pitches? Because, okay, like, you want to adjust. You want to adjust, like, as a hitter, you want to adjust to a pitch getting called, let's say, 4 inches off the plate, not even six. Like, 4 inches off the plate, good pitcher's pitch.
That's two baseballs, by the way.
Yeah, what do you got to do? You got to scoot up in the, like, towards the plate in the box, like, toes on the line. You know, battle the outside, two strikes. Well, guess what? The pitcher's just going to come inside, hit you, and you're going to go sit down because that's strike three. Because that's what college umpires have been doing. And there was, in a crucial moment in the Dallas Baptist-Texas Tech game, that happened.
I didn't get to personally see it because we're just going through all these games, and you miss a pitch every once in a while. But how unreal is that? Like, we had multiple fans hit our DM saying, did you see how Dallas Baptist, like, they could have, it was a winner's bracket game, a 1-0 game against Texas Tech. We had multiple fans submit to us that it probably, you know, it impacted the way the game went. And it ended an inning. So, God, dude, so stupid.
And how many times per game did it feel like that umpires kept going to review, and then they would spend 5-10 minutes reviewing it, and then they would come back and say inconclusive evidence. You know what I would like to see, James? Like, if we're going to keep reviewing in college baseball, the umpire has to explain, like they do in the NFL. You know, whenever they go and review,
it just makes too much sense.
They have to explain to the crowd and to the fans what goes on, because all they do is go point to whoever they called safe or out and do the out call or do the safe call. And they don't say any words. They don't tell the umpire or the opposing managers anything. Like, they just come out from sitting in a room or sitting in with a headset on for 5 minutes and just make the call, and the call usually stood. And so there's got to be better ways to do reviewing in college baseball and Major League Baseball, because they don't announce what they saw. They don't announce why they chose something, you know, if there was inconclusive evidence, if there was, you know, not the right angle, they couldn't see it, whatever it is. I don't know. there was just a big flaw in the review process, and they made so many bad calls that it felt like 5 to 10 times a game they were going to go check themselves, which they don't even see what goes on. There's another umpire in, you know, I think it's Indianapolis that sits there and watches every play and every replay, and they call up to him and he tells them if they were safe or out.
Unreal. Well, I hope there's more than one, because there's too many games going on at one time for that.
And then it would just be too much to ask for them to, you know, have press conferences after the game like they make the players do. They make the players and coaches, you know, stand up to the media and, why'd you get ejected? Like, why'd you make this decision? Why'd you strike out with the bases loaded?
Because this game is hard. You hold a pencil for a living, you know, like
a tape recorder.
A tape recorder.
And then it's hard. These umpires don't have any repercussions at all. You know, they get offended. They eject somebody. They're suspended for 4 games. Can't play in the rest of the regional or the super regional. But, like, you know, they get to go travel to Mississippi State the next weekend and be the home plate umpire and the crew chief. No repercussions for their strikeout that was 9 inches off of home plate.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, I kind of have a realistic view with it. Like, they're not going to be better than professional umpires, duh. But can we at least have home plate mean something? It's not, I don't think that's too much to ask. Like, can we have the object of the whole game that it revolves around? Can we have that actually matter?
Did you know there's actually no black around home plate?
Yes, yeah, we've talked about this.
There is zero black. I mean, oh, that one hit the black. Like, hey, show me the black and I'll
be with you. Between that one hit the black and that's not my call, which one's more frustrating?
That's not my call.
Yeah, well, I talked to three of you and it's none of your calls, so whose freaking call is it?
It's not my call. It's not my call. Not my call. Todd, go talk to him. It's not my call.
Go talk to Todd, man.
Golly, but we're not an anti umpire podcast. We respect what they do. They just need to get better at what they do. Yeah. And they'll probably tell us the same thing. Hey, you guys need to be better at podcasting. Okay, you know, we'll work on it.
Yeah,
we'll work on it. So you want let's preview some of these super regional matchups. I'm sure that's why a lot of people decided to listen to this podcast.
And I would like to announce that Ben and I, we both filled out a bracket that is on our Twitter, and both of us have 5 of our 8 Omaha teams still remaining after the madness. So we are doing well. You know, we never claim to offer gambling advice, but I think we know a little bit. My national championship pick, North Carolina, is all of a sudden turned into hosting a super regional, which is going to be nice. And those were two of the biggest surprises from the weekend. For me, is that outside seeds in LSU and North Carolina now control their own destiny at home to reach Omaha. Wow. So there you go.
Can you believe that two of the teams that we talked the most crap about all season are now matching up in a super regional, and one of them is going to Omaha, guaranteed? Between LSU and Florida State, two of the teams that were the biggest roller coasters all year, we saw LSU get swept by Texas, who ended up being an awful team, and then also plays some bad baseball inside of SEC play. Plus, we had Florida State, who was the biggest roller coaster we've ever seen, beating teams by 15, losing by 14.
Dude, they've got a finance club baseball team captain saving their season.
Yeah, like, that's a hilarious story, by the way. If you're not aware, Florida State's, like, I think 7-hole hitter, something like that. Yeah. It's 7-8-hole hitter. He's a 6th-year senior, right?
He's going to be a grad student. It says he plans on getting his master's in finance.
He's a senior, but it was the funniest thing in the world because they show up a little graphic and it was like, was co-captain of his club baseball team at Florida State last season. And now he's in the starting lineup for Mike Martin in his last season. Like, Mike Martin is relying on a club baseball player who's pretty solid. We'll give him that. Like, he's
he
not
looks like a like he. I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have right. said, "Oh, where'd they get this kid from?"
Yeah, and it was just funny because he was a co-captain, which is the funniest part. I want to know who the other guy is.
Yeah, like, who do you have to share authority with on the club baseball team?
And I can just picture this. So, James, I want you to put your imagination goggles on just real quick.
They're not that good, but I'll try.
I want to tell the story about how I interpret Florida State recruiting this guy to put him on the actual baseball team.
So what you're saying is this is secondhand knowledge. Like, this is from the source.
No, this is not from a source. This is how I imagined it. I imagine Mike Martin sitting in his office calling his assistant coaches and recruiting coordinators in and saying, guys, I want the leash off. I want to go out and recruit again. This is my last season. I want to recruit. Well, Mike, we haven't let you recruit in 10 years. You're too old. No, I'm not. I'm going to go recruit right now. He goes and stomps out of the office, gets his keys, goes and puts them in his like 1955 Chevy truck, and he drives and drives and just does circles around the campus thinking
he doesn't know it.
He's in Tallahassee on campus at Florida State, and he sees lights and off in the distance sitting on like a, you know, a nice plateau, a nice hill, and just looking down on it. It's like, I'm going to go drive to this baseball game.
I'm going to find me a ball player.
I'm going to find me a third baseman. He drives, pulls into the parking lot, and he sees Seminoles on the jerseys, and he's like, great, these kids already have the mold. I like it. Like these high schoolers, they get the memo. They want to be cinnamon rolls. And he goes and watches the game. There's beer everywhere. You know, the kids are drinking beer in the dugouts.
There's old high school kids.
Yeah. These high schoolers get older and older every year. That's what he's thinking to himself. And he sees a nice little shortstop that has the co-captain patch on it, on his jersey. And he sees him go 2 for 3 with 2 doubles in the gap, Oppo, backside, a sack bunt, and steals a couple bags that are really just pass balls that he forgot to change the rules. And he walks up to him after and he said, son, how would you like to be a Florida State cinnamon roll? I keep saying cinnamon roll. I can't get ahead of my head. How would you like to be a Florida State Seminole? Well, coach, I already am one. Well, that's the attitude to have. You're on the team. You mean I get to go play for you, coach? Yes, sir. Come back in August. We'll have a spot for you.
Come back, dude. That has been the highlight of the podcast so far this year. That's my favorite story you've told. We think so. Like, just to interject, like, hands down, this is an awesome story. But Ben and I are in a giggly mood, I guess. It's funny in the sense that, like, a program like Florida State, who's been to the postseason for more than 40 years in a row, is relying on a kid who played club baseball 12 months ago to, like, be the catalyst for their team. Like, it's funny. Like, I said it before the show. If you're a member of the coaching staff, like, this is an embarrassing story. If you're a member of the coaching staff, like, you get paid to not have this happen.
You get paid to find the best talent in the nation.
Yeah.
Like, come play for your team. Like, they could get any high school kid with, like, a relative, you know, sense. Like, they can't get everybody. But they could get, you know, out of the top 100 players, they should be able to get 5 of those guys. Like, that's a small number.
They do. We've analyzed the recruiting class.
And to have a senior who played club baseball on campus 12 months ago in your starting lineup, like, good for him, bad for you guys. Like, no, shame on you guys. Congrats to him.
100%. Like, the kid, Tim Becker, he missed a run and hit opportunity. So it's a 3-1 count, run on first, and it's pretty universally understood that if it's a fastball for a strike, you swing. Well, he didn't swing because, again, we don't have a real strike zone, you know, and it was a strike, and the kid gets hosed at second, his teammate. And then he eventually walks, gets down to first, and the first base coach is clearly chewing him out for it because he's covering his mouth for, like, more than enough time than to say, pick up coach at third. Like, he's clearly chewing him out. It's like, dude, like, you don't get to chew out the kid who was preparing to major in finance as a grad student and, like, hasn't played a game of competitive baseball in almost 5 years. Like, you don't get to chew him.
He,
like,
should be chewing you out.
After you've been gifted a spot in a regional as the last 5 in just because of the previous 4. Like, you got a lifetime achievement award just to play in the tournament. And you're going to chew out Tim Becker for missing a run. Like, how about you? Where did you have an accountability in any of this? So, but we would love to spend, like, you know, Ben and I have similar stories. I was a walk-on for 4 years. Ben got an academic scholarship at his first school. Like, so Ben and I aren't, like, you know, against these stories. We're just taking a different side of it that you won't really hear somewhere else. So.
Right. But we are pro Tim Becker. We are not pro Florida State.
We are pro celebrating Tim Becker and pro laughing at Florida State for being.
This isn't like, you know, even if it was like a team like Creighton. If Creighton had a club baseball player that showed up and is in their starting lineup, it's like, good, Creighton. We love that. Like, you guys found a way to compete and find good talent and develop it. It's like, no, you're Florida State. You should be laughing at walk-ons. So you should be like, no, no, no. We signed 16 All-American freshmen. I mean, high school All-Americans last year.
Yeah.
And
there are two
That brings up a good point. Is he a freshman?
I don't know.
An NCAA standard? Like, could he be a freshman All-American this year? Because it is his first year of playing college baseball?
I think there's some stipulation about, like, if you choose to play club versus non-club, how things work. Because I had a buddy who quit the team, and then he wanted to play club, but he had to wait a full year before he, like, surrendered eligibility. But I don't know if it works that way if you transition from club to the real team. I just know that's how it worked to go down. But I don't know. Maybe we'll see him back next year.
That would just be amazing.
But let's go ahead and preview the Super Regionals. And I think we would like to announce that we're going to dive deeper into them with a more in-depth show Thursday.
Yep. Right now? Okay. Yep. That is a fact. But here we go. So first one, we're going to go with the one seed that escaped out of the regional that they hosted. I say escaped because they had to beat Loyola Marymount twice after losing game two to them. They ended up beating Baylor I think it was Baylor once and Loyola twice. Yep, that's right. I was second guessing myself. But Loyola had a much better club than everybody was expecting. Like, the problem is nobody saw them play this year because I didn't see one of their games broadcastable all season. But they had a couple good arms, and UCLA made it. I don't know. I don't know how to say
it. They didn't make it easy on themselves.
They didn't make it easy on themselves, but it felt like they were in control all 27 innings between Baylor and then Loyola the last two games. It was like they were like, oh, yeah, we are the number one team in the nation for a reason. And we have, like, six guys get drafted during the game yesterday, which was incredible. Like, they had I forgot their second baseman's name. I'm so mad at myself for forgetting it. But he got drafted, and, like, 2 minutes later, maybe less than 2 minutes later, he hits a go-ahead three-run homer. It's like, that's just too cool.
That explains it.
Ryan Garcia gets drafted, and then 2 hours later, he's throwing the seventh and eighth inning on two days rest. And, like, that's just the type of team I like to root for.
Yeah.
John Savage isn't a savage of a coach. He did his interview, and I was just like, that guy is amazing. I'd go to war for that guy.
Dude, Dan McDonald, I would run my head through walls for Dan McDonald. Ask no questions. No questions. Like,
yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
Dude, he reminds me of Major Chip Hazard.
Who's that?
You don't know who Major Chip Hazard is?
I probably should. I don't know.
It's from this movie called, like, Toy Soldiers, or I don't even know what it's called. Some 90s movie where, like, these little mini toys come to life, and they're like, it's a big war.
Toy Story.
No.
90s movie where toys come to life. Toy Story.
No, these are.
See the little army guy? The little army guy in Toy Story?
No, this guy has a face. This guy, you know, Dan McDonald has a face, so this guy has a face. He's Major Chip Hazard. That's what he feels like. Look it up.
I'll Google it after the show. But yeah, so UCLA matches up with Michigan, who's one of three seeds to move on. Michigan comes away with the Oregon State Regional. They looked like the best team in that regional until the ninth inning of game three against Creighton. They had a 7-4 lead against Creighton. If they get three outs before Creighton gets three runs, they move on to a super. They blow it. They give it like six runs that inning. And then it's come back the next day and then just blow the doors off Creighton. I think they scored like 16 runs.
Yeah.
It was incredible. They have some talent, bro. Like, they have some dudes that, like, are athletes. Like, just freak athletes.
I saw they had a couple of kids drafted on the second day of the draft.
Yeah.
I think at least three. It's almost like I picked them to win. But whatever.
You did. Congrats to you, man. Congrats.
You got to be good at something in life, and one-off college baseball picks is where I tap out. So
right.
We'll just stick with that.
So the winner of that Super Regional will match up with this winner in the first round of the College World Series. It is the Lubbock Super Regional, where Texas Tech and Oklahoma State are playing. This is kind of a little controversy where some people believed Oklahoma State should have been a lower seed. Well, lower, higher, however you want to say it.
We've been through this enough.
They should have been a better seed, lower number. And so Oklahoma State actually has to travel to Texas Tech, which they're 0-7. I think they're 0-7 their last seven meetings against Texas Tech. So big task for the Cowboys. This dude, Texas Tech, looked really freaking good this past weekend. I don't know. I'm excited to see this matchup. I'm disappointed that I'm only disappointed because there can only be one Big 12 team in a regional, but there's guaranteed to be one. If that makes sense. Like, no, it's cool that one Big 12 team gets to make it, but I think both of those two teams should be able to face off against an ACC or an SEC team because I want to see which conference is better. Like, I want to see, like, you know, our number one versus your number one. Like, I want to see those matchups. I don't want to see the same matchups we've seen seven times this year.
No, you're exactly right. Like, this goes back to our Field of 64 preview show when they announced the host sites. It's like, why are you going out of your way to match up conference foes if everyone holds serve? Like, no, seen movie before, show different movie. Like,
unless it's Talladega Nights, then I'll sit down and watch it.
Or Infinity War, which I'll just watch over and over again.
Yeah, true. But yeah, so a little preview for this. We'll dive deeper on Thursday's episode. Oklahoma State bats, Texas Tech pitching and bats. It's going to be hot as balls in Lubbock on that turf. Like, good, like, start hydrating now, Cowboy and Lubbock. Not even just the players, the fans too. Like, you guys are going to sweat and sweat and sweat. There's going to be some cases of overheating and what's it called?
Heat stroke?
Heat stroke. Yeah, there's going to be some cases of that in Lubbock. There's, I don't know. Just be ready.
Under 15 home runs on the weekend.
There's going to be a lot of home runs, a lot of runs scored. I'm excited. We'll move on from there. Next, we have the Fayetteville Super Regional. This one's going to be fun because Ole Miss just absolutely rolled through their regional.
Dude, this is going to be a sweep.
Arkansas, they had some struggles against Nick Lodolo, but everybody struggled against him.
Yeah, he was only the seventh overall pick in the draft.
But this one, like, the atmosphere. Like, I wish I could make a trip to Fayetteville this weekend because that is just a life-changing experience.
Yes. I wanted to give a special shout-out. Another reason for the entertainment value of college baseball. The Arkansas fans and the East Carolina fans, after games are over, spending time hanging out with players that are visiting, like the Central Connecticut fan players interacting with the Arkansas fans afterwards and the Quinnipiac players interacting with East Carolina fans after the game, like socializing, hanging out.
Baseball has some of the best, like, classiest fans in any sport. Like, they just want to bro out. They just want to sit back and, like, chill with the players and, like, talk to them, know their stories. And you're right, they were really good hosts. Like, the fans, personally, I thought that they were going to, you know, cause some havoc between the other teams and players, but they were the opposite. But you're right. Shout out to Arkansas, East Carolina fans. Those guys did it right. The Jungle over in East Carolina.
Yep.
Big fans of those guys. And I'm sure they did it every other place. We just didn't get to see the coverage over there.
But I'm excited for this Super. Arkansas, Ole Miss, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And another one that is going to be in crazy atmosphere because we saw it this past week in the regional. But LSU, Alex Box, gets to host another Super Regional. Florida State makes, like, their 14th Super Regional in the last 17 years, I believe. I saw that stat somewhere.
Unreal.
Unbelievable. Like, one of these two teams has been – both of these teams have been up and down all season. They match up against each other. They get three games. Best of the three get to move on to Omaha, which is amazing to me because there was a point where I thought both of these teams weren't even going to make the tournament.
Like, that's right.
Middle of March. And so,
my bold prediction for this series is one of these games is going to go 15 innings.
Let's hope so. I love staying up late watching these. So I hope it's game three. I hope it's, let's see, Sunday.
I hope Tim Becker comes in and closes it out and no one is allowed to celebrate with him. Only Tim Becker gets to celebrate.
his club buddies get to come down from the stands. Probably my least interesting Super Regional is the Nashville one. Vanderbilt and Duke. I realized quickly this weekend that Vanderbilt is head and shoulders better than, I think, every team, man. I don't want to say it because it's going to come back and bite me, but golly, just 1 through 9 in their order, and they have a pitching staff that looks identical every single guy they roll out there. It's like, oh, this guy's 95 too? Like, oh, this one's only 94. Like, they should be able to hit this guy, right?
We got to cash in.
J.J. Bleday is on a different planet than 99.99% of amateur players. He's just so much bigger and stronger and hits the ball further than anybody else. That's why he went number four overall.
I'll have a special segment on how you beat Vanderbilt next Thursday, so get ready.
Next Thursday or this Thursday?
This Thursday. Maybe okay. Next Thursday, because they'll probably just win anyways.
Right. Duke, you kind of got lucky. Duke got to beat they beat Alek Manoah on a fly ball in the first inning that was an error that they counted as a hit. Like, the guy lost it, I believe, in the sky. So they won 4-0, and then they got to beat up a Texas A&M team that was just literally exhausted playing like six games that weekend. So Duke, good luck, but Nashville, it's going to be nothing but Vanderbilt in that one. And Louisville has a tough task. Both of these teams, Louisville and East Carolina, battled through their loser's bracket this past weekend. Both teams have shown signs to clobber the baseball, and they've shown signs of swinging and missing a lot. And the winner of this regional, I hope, goes on and wins it, because these are the two teams I'm rooting for. Like, I'm rooting for like that underdog kind of, not even underdog, but just a team we've never seen win it like in this era. And I don't know. I like the Pirates logo too. I think the East Carolina Pirates logo is the coolest in sports. Louisville was my national championship pick since day one this year. They lucked out. Maybe they're the team of destiny. What do you think about this one, James?
It's probably the most balanced regional, I would say. And yeah, it's kind of an understatement, given that it's a 7-10 matchup. But I think both teams have star power at the plate and on the mound. And I think playing at Louisville is not as intimidating or as difficult as many of the other places around the country. So I feel like that kind of goes in East Carolina's favor, who might not have the depth that Louisville has. So there you go. That's quick analysis.
All right, now we're moving off to the Starkville regional, super regional. Stanford makes the trip all the way from the West Coast down to see the old Duty Noble Field, and they're going to be impressed, because I saw what Stanford plays in over there on the West Coast, and it looks like a practice facility that Mississippi State would use. It is going to be a great time for Stanford. Travel over here to old Mississippi, and like, they're good. I watched them play a lot because they were the late game all weekend, and they're not as good as I was thinking they were, because I didn't see very many Stanford games this season.
The strength of schedule was suspect all year long.
Yeah, I sorry, I just got a text. That was just outrageous.
You're cheating on me?
I think so, man. Dude, I've lost my train of thought.
Stanford.
So I watched Stanford play. I watched Stanford play against Texas this year, and I watched them play against Oregon State. Like, they're good. They're not great. I think Mississippi State rolls them in two games. It really just depends on how injured JT Ginn is, the freshman phenom over there. But I don't know. I don't think Mississippi State will have any trouble with them. I think Miami was a better team than Stanford. By the way, early pick for next year's national champion, maybe the next two-year national champion, I'm taking the Miami Hurricanes.
You can lock me down. I'm in.
They had like six freshmen in the starting lineup and two sophomores and a junior. Like, that young talent goes a long ways, because they're going to be there for another 2 years. But that's irrelevant right now. We'll move on to the last super regional between your North Carolina Tar Heels and the Auburn Tigers, who destroyed everybody in that Georgia Tech regional. They just destroyed them. Like, oh yeah, we were a top 15 team this year. Like, we do have two stud starting pitchers that are going to go in high in the draft. We can hit the ball. Like, our hitters are better than what they look like. So Auburn's a sneaky team that I think could possibly just walk into Chapel Hill and be like, hey, we're your daddy. We're the boss. You guys are playing against us. We're not playing against you.
I did say entering into the field of 64 that Auburn is a surprising team, because based off of the lame scouting end of things, you know, we don't like to make top 25 rankings based off recruiting classes and talent and all that. Like, you got to win your games. But I did say that it's a team that has had underperformers all year that are healthy, and if their talent decides to show out, then they could win the regional. And, you know, enough of the talent showed out. So definitely going to be a tough matchup.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Anything else you want to talk about before we end the show, James? We're right about where we need to be. We will be back. We didn't even talk about Arizona State's collapse against Southern Miss. That was
they exciting. Lost. I'm sad. Boom. It's over.
There was a lot of other things I'm sure we missed. We tried to hit on some of the biggest things this weekend. The Central Michigan team was one of our favorites we've ever watched. I'm glad that we got to see them on primetime. We'll be rooting for the Chippewas next year. They're, guys, we have 3 weeks left of college baseball. Like, let's enjoy it. Let's keep this best secret known to man, like to ourselves. Don't tell too many people because we don't want jerk fans coming into our sport. We don't want people, you know, ambushing us at our game.
Or like, fair-weather fans.
Fair-weather fans. Like, there's going to be a lot of those guys, you know, now that's going to be on ESPN for the Super Regionals and the College World Series. Like, we're our own little nation, guys, and we're going to keep it that way. You know, they're going to want to be one of us. Like, you guys were the original college baseball fans. We're going to keep it that way, and that's what I'm going to leave it at. So you guys take care. We'll be back Thursday for another exciting episode of the 11.7 podcast.